This week in the markets, gold and silver blasted higher amid record volatility on Wall Street. Well, Happy New Year, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek. It's a pleasure to be with you on this December 28th, Season 13, Episode 676 show, the final show of the year. Next week marks Season 14 of Gold Seek Radio. Well, it's been a tough year for U.S. equities. Listeners don't need any reminder there. We gave back all of this year's gains in the equities markets in just a month. However, there's always a bull market somewhere, including palladium. It added about 10% for the year, and another market finished near break-even, the yellow metal. It started and ended the year around $1,300 gold. So it's a relief to say that both of this week's guests expect the precious metals trend to persist. In fact, they think it's a nascent bull market that will run throughout at least 2019. Joining me in part two of the discussion, David Morgan says these are bargain levels. Gold aficionados will see a sea change in market sentiment thanks in no small part to the government shutdown and furlough of about 25% of services and other risks on the horizon. Then our good friend Bob Hoy of Institutional Advisors says that the worst U.S. stock market plunge in over 100 years, the Mnuchin massacre on Monday, may be just a hint of things to come. Of course, the market then reversed on Wednesday to one of the strongest gains in years. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. We have a Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, extension number 514049. We'd like to field your questions and comments. You can jot this down on a post-it pad or plug it right into your phone if you'd like. 641-715-3900, mailbox number 514049. You can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals sector for the second week running as gold flew to a six-month high amid a U.S. government shutdown and record-breaking U.S. stock market volatility. At Friday's closing bell, gold was up about 1.5%, $25, at $1,283, very close to where it began the year. Silver finished higher by 5%, 75 cents in 1 week, at $1,545, while the XAU precious metal shares also picked up $1, 1.5%, closing near 70. Up about the same as gold, $25, finishing at $1,183, looks a little toppy there. Black gold finished near break-even at $45.33. Looks like a very solid bottom, or at least the beginning of one there, on the much-battered sector. Investors turned to the safe haven asset class on news the U.S. government shutdown would continue into the new year and continued trade war concerns. The budget shutdown between the U.S. President and Congress continues as both chambers of the U.S. Congress convened for just a few minutes on Thursday. It resulted in no change to the 25% federal government shutdown as tensions persist between the White House and the Federal Reserve. In related news, elevated systemic risk continues to plague the markets, including the trade war between the United States and China, as well as the UK Brexit from the EU. The vote plus news that China's economy slowed for the seventh consecutive month in December, as EU economic ministers are calling for a similar downturn. Most of these reports indicate that the trade tariffs are a key contributing variable to the downturns. Does not bode well for Washington. Investors will be watching this closely in the new year. So where do investors tend to turn to when the risk-off market conditions return? Well, the Spider Gold shares have benefited that ETF, GLD. This is the largest gold and most trusted gold exchange-traded fund, added over 7% in the last 2 months, twice the performance of the S&P 500, which is down 15% over the same period. The ETF launched higher 2% on Wednesday, its best one-day percentage gain in months. Bottom line, on the precious metals. Little has really changed since last week's report. Traders continue to monitor the looming federal government shutdown closely as the Fed funds futures at the CME show very low odds of a rate hike next year. Last week, I noted Mad Money's host Jim Cramer feels we're entering a gold bull market, and my guests agree this week. Go gold in the new year. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly sunny skies emerged over the New York Stock Exchange after touching capitulation numbers Monday, where the Dow gave back 650 points on rumors the U.S. president would fire the Fed chair. However, the equities market volatility, or the VIX, was up 46% to a 10-month high, triggering the biggest ever Christmas Eve decline for the S&P 500 Monday. By Wednesday, the biggest point gain squeezed many of the shorts, sending the index 1,000 points higher. By Friday's closing bell on Wall Street, the Dow was up still 617 points, adding 3% at 23,062. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 picked up 70 points, 3%, at 2485, while the Nasdaq added 251 points, 4%, at 6584. In related news, the Mnuchin massacre was all we heard on Monday on rumors about the president's plan to fire the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, just as Secretary James Mattis resigned amid disagreements with the president. However, the bulls regained control, as I mentioned, of the major indices, which spiked about 5% alone in one day. On Wednesday, investors were reassured that the rumors of Jerome Powell's demise had been greatly exaggerated. He will remain the Fed chairman until retirement. The USA Today Greed to Fear Index registered the most fearful reading I'd seen last week, so we did get most of the fear wrung out of the markets as anticipated in this report last week. So now that the Fed funds futures indicate virtually no probability for a rate hike next year, it's caused investors to interpret the news as a sign the domestic economy may not be as robust as originally thought. It may not be the Goldilocks economy. Corporate earnings may not be quite as solid as expected, and shares are now paying the price for that. So we'll need to keep an eye on this week's rally. We're still well below many key resistance points. Caution still advisable for the time being. More Gold Seek after the break. Thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business and investing news source. Today's featured guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. David Morgan pens the Morgan Report, covers economic news, topicality, financial health, global economy. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Well, thank you, Chris.
We're a global village now. Borders have completely evaporated. I mean, we're seeing that right now on our own border. We are an enclave of fiefdoms. Tim Draper, you know, Silicon Valley, he purchased a $50, $75 residency card in Estonia. A group of several hundred people who just said, look, you know, I need to have residency outside the United States. They're offering me services I can't have. Unlike any other time in history, it's a global issue. It's no longer going to be possibly confined to Paris or Venezuela or Zimbabwe. And here's a perfect example. The two global superpowers, China and the United States, built on a Mount Everest-sized pile of toxic debt. It works until the music stops. Do you see anything on the horizon that could stop the music here? And what might be the implications for a global economy?
A real long shot, but I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, would be, you know, the shutdown of the U.S. government that, you know, Trump has kind of made a, I don't know if he's made a big deal, but he's mentioned it. That's, you know, happened, and it just, it's a ho-hum, big yawn, you know, nothing burger. And that'd probably be the case even if they did, quote-unquote, shut down the government. However, let's just take it a step further that some unforeseen, unplanned consequence happens due to that system. I think a more important one would be a one-off anomaly in the cyberspace, either a cyber attack or some threat that breaks through security at a high level, like a break into the Pentagon or break into whatever. I think those are the biggest threats that we face that are all of a sudden, I mean, you know, and these things have happened, you know, with the amount of personal data taken from these huge websites that have, you know, multiple, you know, like the one, I forget the name, but it was the, one of the banking, systems that had, you know, there were huge database taken. So you gotta be careful. I think that's a threat. We're so dependent on the electronic system that anything that disrupt that, even in an area, like say it was able to say that we were hit with a cyber attack in a major financial center like London or New York, and that was manifest for a number of days, like 2 days or 3 days. That alone would have a disruption that would be cause a waterfall to climb in all the markets, and it would really put a lot of fear into the financial system. And that's something I don't think people talk about much. Now, again, I hate to put on that hat, oh, I'm a fear porn and I'm this and I'm that, but I'm a thinker, and I don't rule it out. And again, chance favors the prepared mind. So if you prepare mentally that, you know, if that happened, you know, what would happen to you, or how would you react or whatever, a lot has to do with the attitude that no matter what happens, I'm going to make it. Things are going to be okay. People live without electricity. You know, we've only had it for whatever it's been, you know, 100+ years. It's not like it was, you know, through, as far as I can tell, and even that could be questioned because of this rewriting of history. So I'll turn it back to you.
You brought up an interesting little anecdote that you probably didn't even intend to. One of my favorites, Benjamin Franklin, in his simplicity and pragmatism, but as well as his brilliance, many people use it, but they don't really realize that the verbiage was, I think, 200 or 150 years ahead of its time when he said, chance favors the prepared mind. He was forward enough to realize in order for us to regain our independence and our personal freedoms and liberties, we will have to hang together or will most certainly hang separately. Very forward-looking there on many levels. For example, you lose power for 3 or 4 days. Most people don't know what to do. You know, we have 2 generators here and solar panels, but that's from many run-ins with the unexpected. And when the chips are down, we forget just how much leverage electricity gives us, whether it be the kitchen, you know, entertainment, relaxation, or, you know, heat, warmth, electricity. So you make some really good points. But again, yeah, we'll skip the doom and gloom. We just need those pragmatic tips. Why don't you give people, as we wrap up here, your assessment on 2019, what you see ahead? What are some of the roadblocks, opportunities for investors?
2019 is becoming a year where we see more balance. In other words, the stocks are overvalued by any metric, so they're coming down and being revalued to probably a more meaningful level. In other words, where they're coming back to fair valued rather than overvalued. Gold, highly undervalued. I think you see gold moving contra to the market, as I keep saying, and be more moving toward balance. I don't think they'll be balanced in 2019, but I think you'll see a change. I think you're going to see a sea change going from, you know, paper assets back in the commodity sector. Oil and energy particularly plays a very important role, as you just mentioned. And I would like to mention to the listeners, your listeners, that I am starting a new report called Energy Stock Profits. It's an aggressive strategy where you get monthly income from option strategy and also longer-term investments based on our stock picking ability. But that's something we can look at further on. It will be launched next year, so I have much more to say about it. It'll get people tuned up that we'll be having that.
Why don't you give folks an idea of how they can navigate their browsers and just what they'll find there?
Sooner or later, you're going to need the Morgan Report, whether it's the free version, which you can get at www.themorganreport.com, get on our free list, or the paid version, which is on that website. You have to scroll down on the subscription window and read basically the sales letter, see what you get. You can continue right on marching as with your head down and not awake and aware, which is not this audience, but many, many out there. If you continue right on with the same place, you're going to get what you always got. And when this thing hits further, you will consciously or unconsciously realize that we've got a massive, massive change in lifestyle coming ahead of us. And it's something to be looked at as an opportunity rather than something that's going to, you know, take you down. You just, again, have to keep the correct attitude. So you have the ability to, you know, sign up to the Morgan Report now for free. And later on, as you probably have a greater need, subscribe to the full service.
So I want to wish you a very happy new year.
Thank you for having me.
Another big GoldSeek.com radio episode and our featured guest. He's the editor and chief investment strategist of Charts and Markets. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Hello there, and it's good to be with you, Chris.
Well, it's just a pleasure to have you back with us today. And the topic du jour, ladies and gentlemen, on this holiday special episode, of course, they're calling it the Mnuchin Massacre. Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, issued an emphatic, and I'm quoting here, statement saying that our POTUS had denied he was going to fire our Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell, whom he actually helped gain the federal chair.
As you point out, there's focuses on the Federal Reserve. This really requires some perspective.
Last week, the Dow Jones Industrials shed over 1,600 points for the week. And then on Monday, following the very unusual weekend where the Treasury Secretary was actually issuing this announcement on Christmas Eve, this is unprecedented. So the markets don't like uncertainty, Bob Hoy. And then Monday, on I guess what would have been a half-day holiday on the New York Stock Exchange, we shed another 650 points.
December's maybe ever, but I'd have to look at that.
The worst monthly chart on a percentage basis I can find going back to the 1800s.
Yeah, so it's a bad market. The Fed made a mistake. Mnuchin said it made a mistake because he was panicking more than the market was to make it the suggestions he did. Now, you got to, Chris, put the Federal Reserve System in perspective. Originally, it was bankers, so there was some sort of responsibility there. Then also, then later on, in the 60s, the makeup of the Fed and the changed to economists. And then the Fed became everything to everybody. It would make sure that the recovery would be kept going. And then in the absolutely bizarre idea that a stock market would go down, it would prevent bad things from happening. And it is a fraud, a farce. And so what you have here is a perfectly natural bear market for stocks. And the selling is often proportionate to the degree of speculation on the up. And I saw a line I used the other day, Chris, which was, it was like at a very excited cat that ran 40 feet up a 20-foot tall tree. So this is what you've got here. You had speculators up a 40-foot tall tree, or up 40 feet up a 20-foot tall tree. And, of course, it's got to go down. So here's how they work. This was the sixth great financial bubble in history, but the first one being the South Sea Bubble of 1720. When you do the history on these things, Chris, you'll realize that there are strong similarities on the way up a bubble, like in the last year or so of it. There's strong similarities as they peak, and then there's strong similarities on the, let's call it a collapse. So here's the big picture, and this was decades ago when I discovered this, but the South Sea Bubble peaked in 1720, and the equivalent great boom in commodities had peaked 9 years earlier in 1711. So then you move ahead, and there was a good bubble in 1873, and commodities and the rate of inflation in the U.S. had peaked in 1864 with the Civil War, 9 years. Then you had the Great War of 1914 to 1918, where global commodities soared to an exceptional high in 1920, and then they crashed. And here's where things get interesting, because the then new Federal Reserve System looked at the horrendous deflation of 1921, and it colored all economists' view. So they were very fearful of falling prices. So through the mid-1920s, the Federal Reserve was easy with its monetary policy because they didn't want commodities to go down. But they didn't understand that once you've had the commodity boom, then you'll get a boom in financial assets, which was then you brewed up with the infamous peak in 1929 and crash, and that was at the 9 years. So we've had some booms over the last 20 plus years with the dot-com bubble in 2000, and you had a crash. You had a very good bull market complete in 2007, and they say that it was the most severe contraction since the 1930s. But on those two bubbles, what was missing was that there had not been a preceding big peak in commodities 9 years earlier. So then we move along to 2008, when crude oil soared to 147, and you had that bubble stock side peaked in 2007, and the housing side of that one peaked in 2006. So that one we did a good job on. But anyways, you ended up with a bear market. But within that, of course, was that you had the commodities, including crude oil, at the highest ever, and the big bubble, and the biggest commodity boom since 1920. So then you recall that through the last decade, the Federal Reserve was very fearful about falling wholesale prices, or as they now call them, producer prices, and has been easy trying to get the rate of inflation to hold at 2%. Now, I did mention that in the 1920s, the Fed was worried about weak prices and was exceptionally easy, not understanding that the nature of financial speculation. So anyways, here we got the same pattern. And then you had the stock market. If you use the New York Stock Exchange Composite Index, that peaked in January of this year. You also look at the CWI, which is a world stock index without the U.S. market in it, and that also peaked in January. So you look at the timing, because we know when the commodities peaked in 1920 by the month. So that bull market from 1920 to September 1929 was nine years and 5 months. And then this time, from the commodity peak in 2008 to the stock peak in 2018, was 9 years and 5 or 7 months. So kind of fascinating. And you then now, you can now say that the stock market is in a bear market. And you have the things that go with that, Chris. You have, from May, June, weakening commodity prices. You recall that we were looking last February for commodities to firm up, industrial commodities to firm up into May, June. They did. We called those our friends of the bull market. Then with that, we also expected the credit markets to be friendly, and they were also our friends of the bull market. But the line we used was that generally sunshine through to mid-year, August would turn to twilight, and then after August would be the twilight zone. You recall that very scary TV series from ages ago. So, and we now are in the twilight zone. There's nothing any central bank or Treasury Department can do about it.
An excellent historical overview, and it brings, I think, the markets into perspective today, though. I can't help but note, though, we are entering what appears to be a financial twilight zone. I like your, you know, memories of Rod Serling and all of the, you know, sci-fi. Today we have Ray Bradbury, we have Philip K. Dick, Electric Dreams, which is now really popular. The idea you bring up about the central banks, then they're powerless. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange's Fed Funds Futures. This is the go-to spot if you want to know what the big money, the smart money, if you will, or at least the deep pockets, what they think the Fed is going to do. You can now see the Fed Fund Futures into early January of 2020. Now, I've reviewed it. Gave folks last Friday, okay, just a few days ago, the day before the beginning of Hanukkah, okay, 3 days before Christmas Eve, gave our listeners a view into the future because I said, folks, according to the Fed Funds Futures, the Fed has finished their rate hiking cycle. This December, that was it. Your thoughts seem to corroborate that. Very low current probabilities for any of the 2 to 3 rate hikes the Fed had been telegraphing for all of 2019. These markets turn around and the economy continues to remain very robust. They're going to still need to put the brakes on. Of course, we know they cannot any more than you can remove a Supreme Court justice. Once they're in place, they're essentially in place.
Oh, yeah. Now, first, you've got to understand that at the exciting times in the credit markets, which are at the bottom of a bear market for stocks and at the top of a bubble. Now, history shows that in the senior central bank, it was the Bank of England before the Federal Reserve, that market rates of interest change, like short-dated, the equivalent of treasury bills are the equivalent, change before the Fed or the senior central bank changes the administered rate. So please understand, and our listeners, that the senior central bank follows changes in market rates of interest. They do not set interest rates. So here we are now. What drives short rates up in a boom is, of course, the demand for speculative money to fund leveraged positions. And that leveraged positions, of course, is outside of the stock market as well. It's in the yield curve and credit spreads. It's also in real estate and everywhere. So what I'm watching for now is the treasury bill rate to turn down, and then probably some months later, then the Fed will find the reason to lower rates. So the next change in interest rates will be short rates falling. You've already got the long rates for junk bonds going up. Now, that's critical in the collapse of speculation. The low-grade bonds go no bid eventually. So the key to things now is the treasury bill rate turning down, and we will be watching it because, as I've often written about credit markets, when they get on a trend, they go forever. And then, Chris, I usually add, and then some. So the key now is to watch for the treasury bill rate, and it will, I think, soon turn down. And then after that, the Fed will go through some convolutions while they come up with a reason why they then are lowering rates. But as recently as 2007, in September, when there were strains developing in the credit markets, Wall Street pundits there then got out and said not to worry because the Fed would cut rates. Now, we haven't seen that. But keep in mind that throughout business history, of which there's pretty good details for more than 300 years, that short rates go up in a boom and down in a bust. So here you have the top Wall Street pundits in 2007 saying not to worry because the Fed was soon going to lower rates. But if you take a look at financial history, you'll realize that the fastest declines in short interest rates occur with the worst bear markets. So and to flip it going the other way, there's considerable irony, is that rising T-bill rates with the Fed following with rising Fed fund rates indicates the boom is on. So here you've had the professional Wall Street punsters spending the summer worrying about rising interest rates. Of course, I spent the summer writing saying rising interest rates confirms the boom is on. So now we're looking for the short rates to go down. We've already got the yield curve began to change last summer at the far outs, like the 5 to 30 year reversed. And we also wrote in the summer that you didn't need to have the curve invert. All you needed to do is have it reversed, and it had reversed by late September, and then the rest followed. So you've got each of those great bubbles, Chris, since 1720, and this is number six, ran into liquidity problems in the fall and suffered forced liquidation, which we have. And most, now here's the pattern on them, which was fascinating, and I put it together decades ago, is that you'd have heavy liquidation in October, down to late October, which we got, a rebound, which we got, and then a test of the lows in November. But one of those bubbles, the one of 1825, which was a huge one, it was magnificent. That one, the liquidity problems didn't clear until December 24th of that year. And where are we here now? My guess is that the immediate liquidity problems have probably maximized. We've got a couple of our indicators showing downside capitulations, and we're looking for a few other things to conclude that probably the worst is in. And it's the worst is in, Chris, fitting with a historical past.
I mean, obviously, we've seen T-bills, T-notes, their yields absolutely collapsing in recent weeks. This is an interesting trend because we hadn't seen that for a while. On Monday alone, of course, Christmas Eve, I believe it was, I think just a half session, you know, we saw gold explode almost an entire week's worth of gains, about $14 added to last week's gains. You know, we're over $100 off of the lows here. We've sliced through every resistance level. Do you agree with a lot of our guests that if we can clear the 1450 area, it might be back on for a bull market?
Yeah, you've got to put my historical hat on again. There were long periods in economic history when the senior central bank had a convertible currency, convertible into gold. You know, that was sterling in England for more than 100 years, and you still had great financial booms and busts. So you take the real price of gold, like you deflate it by the rate of inflation in the consumer and the CPI, and it tells you a story. And what it says is that when you're in a great financial mania, gold's real price goes down. Like the real price recently was at its best in 2011, and then that's really when the financial mania started to fly. And it's coming all the way down, and it can say for the last year and a half, it's trying to base. So then when you take gold's real price in 1929 or 1873 or 1825, any of those great bubbles, the price went down during the boom, and gold stocks were underperformers, where almost every other stock they could promote to the moon. Here comes the problem, is that in a liquidity crisis and going into a financial contraction, the careful money goes to the most liquid items, which are treasury bills in the U.S. dollar, and also gold is liquid. So it's going to be buying gold, and the careful money is going to be buying U.S. treasury bills. So you're going to have a firm to steady U.S. dollar. You're going to get some rallies in gold, but I wouldn't play gold itself long in U.S. dollars because the U.S. dollar is going to be firm. Where the money will be made is where it's been made in previous Great Depressions, is in gold stocks. Gold divided by the CPI, our view is that it's built a base over the last year and a half, and it's close to breaking out. And when you have gold's real price going down, it means that the gold miners are having problems getting enough price for their product against how much it's costing them to mine it. You got high cost of fuel, high cost of mining equipment, high cost of wages. And then when you go into the post-bubble contraction, all of that changes. And gold mining is the one thing that you can analyze that is going to become very profitable. So I don't care about what gold does in U.S. dollar terms. I care about what gold does relative to the cost of mining, and this should go up. So I've mainly mentioned the producers, whereby their costs become weak relative to what they're getting for bullion. But it also affects exploration properties, whereby demand for... Here's the other thing I mentioned, Chris, is that when people get scared and buy gold, the investment demand for gold increases. So you're going to have increasing investment demand for gold. That will then make profitability flow back into the gold miners. And then also it enhances the valuation of any exploration projects that one has or one's looking at as an investor. And having been being a very old geophysicist and having spent some time in mining exploration, I really like the exploration side when you get into the bull market, and which we are probably starting with, as I said, the real price. So our advice in the last couple of months has been to accumulate gold stocks on weakness. And at first it was a minor position, and then 2 weeks ago we said, you know, to add the positions on buying on weakness. So the best bull markets have happened in post-bubble contractions. And even, Chris, the greatest gold rushes in history have occurred at the depression bottoms, like the 1930s. Depression, many men unemployed, and the real price of gold goes up, so people go looking for it, and when they find it, you have a discovery rush. That was the same depression bottom in 1895. You had the Klondike, and then 1840s, that was a depression bottom, and you had the gold discovery in California. Also in Melbourne, Australia, was a gold rush. So each of the depression bottoms have been fantastic for gold. And so I'm looking forward to that again. I think that we are at the start of a very lengthy bull market for the gold sector. Of course, there will be some business recessions and booms. You know, I don't want to use the term boom, but the economy will continue to fluctuate with weak recoveries, but relentless contractions. But there's also something else that's going to happen in here, Crispy, other than the discovery that the gold mining sector is the place to be. People are going to have a critical view on central bank and policymakers who spent trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money trying to prevent bad things from happening. And the bad thing has started. So the public's going to say, what are you idiots doing? And what they also have been doing is they've set up a financial system so that the big traders and big banks can't lose money. They make it a speculative environment where they can make huge money on the way up, and then when it turns bad, they bail them out. Now, this is going to set up, let's call it a common sense revolution. And the public is not going to like it. So we've talked about now since 2016, a popular uprising going on where people take a look at in your face and in your wallet governments and say no, and through political fortune, the popular uprising ended up with Trump as its executive. And while he's in a storm you know, a political storm, the movement, with Trump leading, is attempting to do the right thing, which is to constrain government ambition. So there's two aspects to this. One is actually the people taking over the government again. Remember the saying, we the people? And they also, the people will insist on having sound money. Because what has happened with the Federal Reserve System is, no matter how altruistic they originally thought it was, it has become a tool of big government. So the Fed was corrupted from what it might have been to providing unlimited funds to an experiment in unlimited government. So this is where the wall has been built. We often talk about the Berlin Wall and preventing people from leaving the workers' paradise. But with the Obama administration, that government was then building the legislative or regulatory equivalent of the Berlin Wall under Obama. And this is now what's happening with the popular uprising, is they're attempting to take the regulatory equivalent of the Berlin Wall down brick by brick. And I think that a financial contraction will motivate the people to look at the government as the problem, as Reagan frequently stated. And instead of pleading for more government, they're going to say enough. And it's happening in other countries. You've got the Yellow Vest uprising.
Right, in Paris, right?
We've got a long-time subscriber that runs money in Holland. And he sent a couple of notes, maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, pointing out that the police there are facing their equivalent, Holland's equivalent of the Yellow Vest, and saying, look it, guys, we're with you. Just don't do any property damage, and we're going to all be happy. It'll work out. Make your point. Now, here's where my history really comes in, Chris, because in 1975, I came across some papers by a researcher by the name of Barbara Bell, and she was working on climate cycles in the Nile River, where you would have long periods of favorable floods, then a climate change and unfavorable floods. So the gist of the story is that with favorable floods, every year you had good crops and more crops, so then you'd have more people. And then when you went unfavorable, every year you have less, so then there's strains in the system. But of course, the governing classes controlled the grain, and they were living well and promising well. The irony in those situations was that the palace guards protecting the governing classes were not of the governing classes. They were of the people. And when push came to shove, suddenly one day the palace guards laid down their spears. And they called it interregnum. They called it dynasty change. But anyways, the government got back in the hands of the people, and food distribution as well. So then I knew about that when we were going into the late 1980s. When there were popular uprisings in Eastern Europe. And so the thing to watch for was on the border guards in East Germany and other parts of East Berlin. And the border guards were not of the governing classes. They were of the people. And then one day they just laid down their AK-47s. And all the Germans wanted to do was go cross-border shopping. And they went cross-border shopping, and then the dictator in East Germany, Honecker, he had to immediately change the law that required him to murder Germans for going from one part of Germany to another part. So, sure, there was Gorbachev and there was Reagan and all that sort of stuff, but essentially it was the same old pattern whereby the folks get fed up with too much government and they rise, because it takes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of the fist pounding down on the people, the authoritarian fist. We cover interest rates, equities, commodities, currencies, precious metals, and you can get in touch real easy, just bobhoy.com. And we welcome people to take a look at what we're doing. But just Google Bob Hoy and you'll get it.
As you know, Chris, and you can get in touch with us, Bob Hoy, just do bobhoy.com, everybobhoy.com.
Bob Hoy, Institutional Advisor. We'll talk soon.
Good to talk. Bye-bye.
Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome back on his third appearance, Joseph Crosso, with his colleague Brian McEwen. Joseph Crosso is the Executive Chairman, CEO, President of Golden Arrow Resources Corp., headquartered in Vancouver, Canada. Golden Arrow is an explorer and prospect generator focused on identifying, acquiring, and advancing precious metals and base metal discoveries throughout quality deposits. Welcome, gentlemen.
Chris, and thank you for the opportunity to explain what is our predominant exploration on our side. Obviously, with the market conditions right now, we are definitely attracted to raise our level of exploration, elevated to projects which have a strong indication of geology or resources, just as a per our announcement today. We feel that what we're doing to take it as a great opportunity for us to locate several projects which are well advanced towards discovery. Our potential for discovery are greater and our risk for exploration are lower because of the geology that has already been delineated. What I would like to again remind the audience that Argentina was 70 years plus only in agriculture. I was instrumental in visiting Argentina and realizing that this huge country of almost 3 million square kilometers with 9,300 international borders with countries that were involved in mining. So when I went there, I said, I shook my head and I said, this has got to be an opportunity that I must discover. So we did a geology research, come up with a study, which excited me to no end. And here we go. I took the opportunity of reopening Argentina mining after 70 years of inactivity. Obviously, with this potential in our hand, we are doomed to be successful. And we will continue to do what we know best, which is exploration. One notable change, because of the market condition, allow us to acquire advance the projects with resources. This is basically where we start now. And by doing that, obviously, you eliminate all the very early stage virgin product that you got to advance them to what if you found some to geology. Well, we, I feel, are making a huge positive change for our shareholders and the one that will invest in our company in the future. That immense risk associated with early stage exploration, we are living into the very minority of our activity. I would like to ask Brian McEwen, who obviously discovered, negotiated, and landed this acquisition for us.
President Grosso, thank you for that excellent overview. And yes, Brian McEwen, please continue with your thoughts.
To build on what Joe has been saying, since we went into made our deal with the production at Puna on the Chinchillas project, we've been out very, very aggressively looking at projects in both North and South America and looking at a lot of projects. We are very happy to be able to announce our first of what we believe will be several others, at least a few others in the next little while. We're happy to be working in Chile, where everybody is familiar with the geological potential of the projects in Chile, and we're in an area near Copiapó with a lot of world-class, well-known deposits. The project specifically that we're looking at has been looked at in the past by Inmet Mining, as well as other First Quantum, and we went in there with an idea of the regional geology and we liked what they had seen, and they had identified with this porphyry. But associated with these porphyry deposits, you can get a lot of, you know, epithermal gold and other projects depending on the surrounding rocks. And we believe that that's what's happening in after our surface due diligence and looking at the drill holes, we believe there's a very good potential to discover something that we'll be able to move forward quickly. Find that I'll be going down to Chile in the coming weeks to actually get everything and kicked off. And so stay tuned for some more information coming out of that project for us in Chile.
President Grosso, comments on Atlantida?
Well, obviously, it's one of the first acquisitions that we have made. It's an enormous potential for surrounding property with which we also be involved for sizable discovery of gold and gold equivalent. That is really to excitement that we have going with the portfolio of property that we have already established, which has been very prolific. I've said, and I don't want to sound repetitive, we're looking for lower risk and higher opportunity to find the new discoveries.
It's clearly an exciting time, too. You couldn't be more timely with, of course, the yellow metal soaring today, approximately $30 at least at one point. So listeners will be particularly keen to hear more about the Chinchillas project. Any thoughts there, gentlemen?
The project now, they've been working on that. They've been working on that for a while now. And if you could see some of the photos, and the actual grand opening is coming up towards the end of this month. That's in production. We've actually had the first ore go through the mill in more of a test phase, and that'll be ramping up into full production over the next little while. There is, as associated with any mining, there is another drilling program underway, right? They're actually running the program. We don't have a lot of details on the drill program. There's some targets that are in and around the Perquitas that needs to be evaluated for possible high-grade underground. And then in the region, the 50 kilometers that surround the two properties, Chinchillas and Perquitas, we have an agreement whereby anything in there will go to the Perquitas mill. And this latest drill program is to evaluate some of those more regional targets or targets in the area that could develop into further feed and extend the life of the mine.
Joe Grosso was discovered by Golden Arrow. Golden Arrow, which I'm the president of and the proud president of, that took advantage of a very notable size that Silver Tandit, or SSR Mining, as they changed their name, their operation was coming to an end because there was no more ore to process. And therefore, it was an incredible coincidence that we needed an infrastructure, production infrastructure for Chinchilla. They needed our discovery of Chinchilla at whatever level for them to take it forward at their cost, and took about 18 months to bring it production time, which is imminent and underway. We feel that this is a great gain for our shareholder. Is definitely bringing us to be 25% partners of an infrastructure that would take several years to build, and a lot of uncertainty would be extremely dilutive. We have a turnkey situation going that with the least negligible dilution to GRG, to Golden Arrow. We have secured this diversification of interest, which is not our mainstay at the moment. I think we're excited in trying to learn how they do and what they do, but we will definitely totally focused in the future that we have long designed for, to become explorationists. Now, Chris, I'm sure that it's not a novelty to you. In order to bake bread, you need a baking flour. In order to be in production, in mining production, there's got to be a discovery. And discoveries are traditionally not by the producer, who have a different skill, very important, and they have the pocketbook as well. The exploration, it's a combination of excellent geologists and courteous, humble relation that you develop with the villages associated and close to the project, which we have excelled. We have been awarded top awards for recognizing that in 25 years of work in Argentina, we haven't had a single rejection in 25 years, which I can tell you that with Argentina being out of the mining business for 70 years, developed antagony against the mining, which we have overcome. The point at which has to be clear that we are proud that we have seized an opportunity that Silver Standard needed, a project like ours, which was early stage, and we cashed in on a very lucrative 25% that could produce us the first 8 years, which has already been projected, but we feel that the location and that the amount of ground is still available in the same location, it's approximately 93% of the property, still has a great potential for increasing the 8 years projected now into decades. That is now in the hand, solely in the hand of Silver Standard, we're one of the best producers in the world. We're glad to be associated with them. We're glad for the gain of our shareholders, but we're also glad to get back to something that we feel comfortable and we know that we are best.
Well, hat tip for these accomplishments and another Argentine project, Golden Arrow's Don Bosco Copper Gold Project.
We've got several projects within the portfolio. I think over 200,000 hectares, Don Bosco being one, Magote. There's several of these projects that any one of them could definitely be a company maker. The issue that we have with them is that as a junior company, they're very expensive to explore, to get the access. The altitude limits them to usually just 6-8 months of the year. I mean, Don Bosco, it's pretty hard to work there year round. You know, that's the problem with them, but these projects are all, they're very good projects and we're aggressively trying to, joint venture them with major companies and, you know, we've got a lot of these under confidentiality agreements right now as people, sniff around and it allows our team to, spend more time looking at projects that are year round successful like what we're looking at in Chile and some of the other projects that we have in Argentina.
Very good. President Grosso, any comments on Don Bosco?
Well, we definitely want to take it forward as much as we can. The season is on our side because it's getting summertime for them while it's getting winter for us. So we're definitely going to be advancing that project and then to take it from there. Like we said, our main driver right now is to come down to elevation, which are year-round accessible, which are more manageable by a junior exploration company. Without a question, the Don Bosco would be one activity that we're going to be looking at soon, but continuing in creating opportunities wherever we can find advanced project that doesn't take it too long to get to discovery. But obviously, I am proud of my team. I'm proud of the accomplishments. This market not only is creating greater buying opportunity of projects for us, it is creating even a greater opportunity for future investors. Chris, I like to be very clear about it. If you take a look at the values that Golden Arrow 101 million shares outstanding have, it's very elevated. And we're trading at less than 15% of the book value. 15%, 15%. And we all know that exploration mining company trade at a multiple premium. We're trading almost at 10 cents on the dollar. So it is a great, great opportunity to take a look at us, consider us one of the great opportunity for investing.
Would either of you like to address some of these other interesting projects for the listeners today? Caballos projects?
Yes, we also have Potrerillo, which is located about 6 or 7 kilometers away from the project on the barbaric Veladero. If you have a strong arm, I'll tell you, you could hit to the production pit, which is Filo Federico. These are ideally located. Rick, and I have to reiterate one more time. We have done our work in developing two projects that should interest majorly the major producer with the very deep pockets. This can become
huge projects. Mogota, there is a 6 or 7 discovery within a half a meter to a few kilometers.
Mogote property borders Vila do Sol. NGX is doing a pre-feasibility study right now, and we have the property that's right up against it. And then on the other side of it is Jose Maria. So we are right in an area there where there's some big projects. As far as coastology goes, these projects are those definitely all in very good neighborhoods. Touched on earlier is that we have been looking in Argentina. We've been looking at, you know, the countries surrounding Argentina and up in North America as well. So as Joe said, it's been a very good time to be a buyer or an acquirer. We've got some very interesting projects that we hope to be announcing again in the near future to add to the portfolio.
Very near future. We have been very busy negotiating and looking the progress in value of the shares that we can bring to our current shareholder that are faithful with us and the new one that may consider due diligence on our company to join us as shareholders.
Any additional information for listeners? Anything come to mind?
The only thing that comes to mind at the moment very prominently, we are very grateful for the third time to bring us to your listener. We're very proud of that. And the rest of it, if it's an opportunity in the mining and exploration, we're on top of it. That's all I can say. We are a very motivated and committed management team that even bad time, we stay excited.
And Mr. McKeown?
No, I think Joe's pretty much said it all.
To find out more about Golden Arrow Resources, we'd like to encourage our listeners to direct your web browsers to goldenarrowresources.com, ticker symbol GRG.V. Plug that in at almost any website, and you will find this very attractive company. President Grosso, Ryan McKeown, we want to thank you so much for these updates on Golden Arrow Resources. We'll certainly look forward to hearing more of these exciting developments, hopefully before the year's out.
Well, we'd like to close by saying that we are very grateful to you for leading us and keeping us current with Gold Seek Radio. Gold Seek is obviously a good way to stay informed on financial investments and general. So thank you.
Keeping with our Italian and Espanol themes here, arrivederci and vaya con Dios, mi amigos.
Oh, vaya con Dios. Un abrazo, señor.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I'll paraphrase a quote by Thomas Paine when he said that arguing with those who have renounced the use of reason is like administering medicine to the dead. This is how I often feel when tuning into mainstream media programming. It's as if the acceptable parameters of debate that mainstream media reports within are carefully designed and scripted to answer one question. What can we make them believe today? The tipping point for this kind of reporting, if indeed one could even call it reporting, when in reality news as it is often presented is more about persuasion and propaganda than simply getting the facts out. No, the tipping point for this brand of reporting was in fact September 11th, 2001. In many respects, that is the day the truth began to die in our once great U.S. media. If you ever need a reminder as to why truth is so critical to fight for, truth in politics, truth in media, truth in the economy, truth in everything, I suggest watching or rewatching a YouTube video titled 9/11 Unseen on TV. It has over 29 million views at last count. Because you can't leave a place you've never been to. So much collective repression has occurred about so many things since 9/11, it would take many discussions to address them all. So much is going to happen as we enter 2019. So much that is unexpected. Financial, political, and social anchors that have been weighing us down, and in many ways are at the root of what ails us as a country and a world, need to be addressed. We are not prisoners to yesterday's choices, and because of that, we all have great potential and the capacity to make 2019 and beyond the most important time in our history. Wishing everyone a safe and profitable New Year. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.